And if I recall correctly, we were up to Seif Gimel. So in Kuf Beches, Seif Gimel. This is a sorry. Very complicated sugya, very complicated sif. As a matter of fact, it's so complicated that if you look in the Pisrei Tshuvas of Katan Zayin, he just gives a list of a million shuts about this. And in the end, quotes in Rabbi Yehuda who says that Lo Nitam Rishos Chalmor Lifso Kadin Bezeki in the Gdolei Hador. That this sif is so complicated that a regular rabbi can't paskin based on sif gimel, only Gedolei Hador can because it's too complicated for anyone to really figure out how to paskin. Okay, that's true. But we'll just try to get a basic understanding of what's going on, even though, you know, if we ever need to paskin from this sif, we'll go to the Gedolei Hador. Hechnitza shvoferes v'otzia badam tehora. If you insert a shvoferes and you take out dam with it, then it is then she's tahora. Okay, this is the sugya on daf chaf aleph to daf chaf beis maseches nida. They have a whole shakel atari about dam that comes out through a tube, and the maskan of the gemara is pretty clear that dam that goes out through a tube is definitely tahora, does not make her nida. It is not a problem. Okay, exactly what the and they said b'sara v'lo b'shvil feres. And the simple shot seems to be, although we'll come back to this at the, we'll come back to this in a few minutes, that it's only considered the normal re'ias dam when it's without a chatzitza, when it's touching her flesh, not just it was originally touching someplace in the uterus, it had to come from someplace, when it comes out touching her flesh. Here, if it comes out inside a tube and it has a chatzitza, it has a hefsek from her actual body, then it's not a problem. Okay, we'll come back to that. V'chein, im rasa dam b'chaticha, afilu hi mevukas, v'adam b'vkoim b'inish nogea b'vsara tehora. Likewise, if blood comes out in a piece of something, let's say a piece of flesh or something, which is not normally supposed to come out, but for some reason comes out, and not that the blood is, again, there are three cases of blood on a chaticha. You could have blood inside the chaticha. If blood is inside the chaticha, that's the same as shofaris, right? Shofaris is mutter, blood inside the chaticha is mutter. That is not so hard. You could have a case of blood outside the chaticha, on the outer surface of the chaticha. That, all the achronim say, if you place through the semen, that is for sure... This is for sure tahora. This is for sure tamea. Those are not the interesting discussions in the Gemara. The interesting discussion in the Gemara is what's called palipalue. Right? Palipalue. Palipalue, I'm not such a good artist, but it means that there are cracks in the chaticha. And there's blood in the cracks. So on the one hand, the blood is touching her flesh as it comes out, but it's still inside a chaticha. It's not like a separate thing from the chaticha. The blood on the surface, it's separate from the chaticha. It just coincidentally came out with the chaticha. So that's not a heter. What if the blood's in the cracks? This is what's called in Lashon Hara pale paluye. That means cracked. That just means cracked. And the maskana of the Gemara, according to many Rishonim, is that it's tahora, although not everyone agrees about this case. So here we have a big machloket. What's the din in this case and why? Right? What's the din in this case and why? The Gemara has a line in the maskana, at least the way the Chacham say, in dark shalisha los dam chaticha, oh, dam and chaticha is not a problem. So what exactly does that mean? So, every Rishon has their own pshat. Let's just see some of the pshatim. The maskana, the Gemara,
A, B, C, Maskanas HaSugya, is that Ein Darka Shel Isha Liros Dam Bachaticha, and she's Tahora. That's clear.
Great. The question is, what exactly does this mean? I won't put all the pshatim. Rashi says, and everyone attacks Rashi for this, Rashi says it's referring to case C. That's the case. And the logic is, that it must be Damaka and not Damnita. Because after all, Damnita doesn't usually come in cracks, and therefore it must be Damaka. She must have a maka. That's Rashi's heter. All the Rishonim don't like this because it's not parallel to the other lines of the Gemara. Okay, what does Tosfos say?
Tosfos says, no, there's no heter for case C. It's talking about case A. And the heter is that chatzitza, like shvoferis.
Right, the Rambam also seems to be like Tosos, according to most achronim. And there is no heter for KC of polytoluia. Tosos says, because this line of the Gemara doesn't say the words polytoluia, Tosos says it's not the case. The Rosh is the one who makes all the action happen here.
The Rosh says, he's quoting the Rosh Mishans, if I'm not mistaken, says the Rosh it's KC. But he says a big chish. He says, what's the heter of KC?
Clearly not heter of chatzitza, because the blood can touch on the way out. It's like in the cracks, and it touches as it goes out. And he doesn't like the heter of Rashi. The heter of Rashi is like igloy milsa, that she must have a maka. He says, that's not what the Gemara means. Darka is not igloy milsa. Darka is a principle. Says the Rosh, what's the principle? He says, this is a new principle. The truth is, a lot of Rishonim say, there's a principle that if it's not the normal way, it's mutter. They define not the normal way is chatzitza. He says, principle is that dam sheyotza shelo kederech anashim, any dam that comes out not normally, eino mitami. And this is the Rosh's new principle. Any dam that comes out in an abnormal, strange way is not mitami. That's a new principle of the Rosh. Now, let's see how the, and therefore, what does the Rosh say based on that? He says, we have no idea exactly what he means by the case, but he's clearly talking about some type of prolapsed uterus, right? A prolapse is, okay, I don't know if anyone ever heard of a hernia. It's somewhat similar. It means when a piece that's inside the body comes outside the body, comes out. You know, whenever there's a piece, an organ that's supposed to be inside the body, and there's some, like, exit hole nearby, either to the outside of the body or to a different part of the body where it doesn't belong, it could happen sometime that the muscles that keep it in place get weakened or damaged or something happens, or various things, and it can fall out. Right, a hernia means when the intestines fall out, not out to where you can see them, but out into a different part of the body where they don't belong. And a prolapse is when something actually, like, is near an entrance to the body and falls out. This is actually a common thing, a prolapsed uterus. That seems to be what the Rosh was talking about. Ad hayom hazeh, it's still a common thing. Obviously, we have better ways of treating it than they did in the time of the Rosh. But it means when the uterus falls out, it's supposed to be inside, but it can fall out.
Maybe explaining what Jeanette Garmin-Corp.
Yes. So that, before I'm reading, the Rush says, Annie had a case of a woman. We're not sure exactly what means by the case, but I think we're pretty confident that he's referring to a prolapse. I mean, that's the, you know, what exactly happened then to this woman is Machlokes, the Beis Yosef, and the Dark Emotion, everyone. But the simple shot is a woman had a prolapse. The actual uterus came out. And then somehow that led to something else coming out.
which we'll have to see the different shatim. And he said, well, that's a not normal way, right? That's not normal. Normal is, like, the uterus stays where it belongs, and then blood comes out. This is not the normal way for this to happen. Since it's not the normal way for this to happen, it is mutter. That was the chiddush of the Rush. And it seems to be against Tosfos. He assumes that there's a heter, even though there's no chatzitza. He didn't say there's a chatzitza. Seems to be against Rashi. He says that there's a heter, even if it's actual damnida, but if it came out in an abnormal way because of this prolapse. So the Rush says there's a mutter whenever there's a heter whenever it comes out unnaturally. Now the question just became two questions: A, do you pass like the Rush, which we've seen in the Shach, etc., and B, what exactly do you mean, and what exactly happened in this case of the Rush? And here it's a big mystery, and there's a lot of unclarity in interpreting the case of the Rush. The main unclarity is the machlokes between Beis Yosef versus the Ramah and everyone else in the world, or at least that's an exaggeration. The Ramah and most of the Achronim as to what came out of her body that we're poskinning about. Right, clearly, if her uterus falls out, I mean, doesn't fall out, like, well, okay. If her uterus comes out, that's not a shayla. The shayla is only if dam came out, or something came out. What came out of her body? So what's the case of the Rush? And therefore, what's the chiddush of the Rush? The Rush had some case of nefilas hamakar, right? I don't know what it's called in modern-day Hebrew when doctors discuss it. You know, there's probably some different term for it, but the Achronim called nefilas hamakar. The uterus falls out, and he had some shayla about something, and he paskin, and the psak was tehora because of yitzia shelo kedarka. What was the case? So here we have the machlokesin Beis Yosef and the Darki Moshe, even though there's some lines in Beis Yosef that no one really understands properly. Beis Yosef said, what fell out that we're asking the shayla about? According to Beis Yosef and the Mechaber right here, what fell out that we're asking Shaila about? So, Chatichos. Chatichos fell out. Right? Chatichos fell out, and that's what was Mutter. So, what's the case? So, says the Beis Yosef Mechaber that Chatichos, what do you mean fell out? Chatichos fell out of her body, meaning, I don't know, we have a doctor here, maybe he could try to figure out exactly what happened, although it's going to be a little tricky, because Beis Yosef is not describing the case he encountered, he was describing his pshat in a case that the Rush encountered. So, you know, obviously there's somehow something weird happened there. I don't know if it's relevant to things that we recognize nowadays or exactly what happened. Somehow the uterus fell out and started to fall apart, and like pieces came out. Right, so pieces came out, chatichos came out, right? That's the case of the Beis Yosef. Chatichos came out. And what's the chiddush? The chiddush is chatichos came out, but it was just the exact case of the Gemara. Chatichos came out, you know, upali gluye, with cracks with dam. So chatichos came out with cracks with dam. All the Rush said is, look, I interpret the Gemara to say that when chatichos come out with cracks with dam, it's okay. So that's not the normal derech of dam to come out, so it's mutter. That's the case according to the Mechaber. Chatichos came out. Yes?
Why would this be considered damaka?
What?
This is clearly not...
Aha. So I think the problem is here. Now, again, it's, you know, I really identify with the Noda Yehuda saying that only Gedolei HaDor understand this sugya, because it's just, it's so... Marish, the Achronim don't even agree as to what the Achronim from 100 years before them said that, the early Achronim said that the Rishonim meant. It's a really hard to figure out, like to even trace, make sure the two people on the same page are even speaking on the same language. But the problem here seems to be that the uterus itself, meaning where does the dam nida come from? The dam nida comes from the uterine lining, right? The uterus itself, like, has dam nida. We're not talking about dam ma, meaning, so far, we're not talking about, like, a blood from a cut. I think the challenging part of this, the Nefilas HaMakor, is that the uterus itself has the dam nida on it. If the uterus falls out, then real dam nida comes out. Because real dam nida is just the lining of the uterus. So it's not as if you said a doctor came and, I don't know, he cut a piece of something and took it out and there was blood. So that would be damaka from a cut, whatever. But if the uterus starts falling out, then there's real damnida there. So how do you view that? And what if, like, then she gets her period after the uterus fell out? Like, there's damnida coming out, but it's coming out in a strange way, etc. That's what makes this challenging, because ein lecha damnida gedola mizo, of, like, what's lining the uterus and is coming out. So I think that's why this is so confusing. So the Beis Yosef sort of says, what was the case here? The case here was she didn't see blood. She saw pieces of flesh. Don't ask me why. Maybe there's some other disease that I don't know about. Or maybe if you have very bad medicine and whatever, I don't know, bad luck and whatever, and the uterus can actually prolapse. Usually, in modern day times, when the uterus prolapses, I don't think pieces of it start falling out on the floor. But maybe it happened, or maybe, I can't do a medical diagnosis. Anyway, the Beis Yosef says the case is pieces of flesh came out with blood in them, and we're not sure how to look at it, because it's not like an obvious maka, because they also actually had damnida in them, because they were pieces of flesh that hold the damnida and release it. And therefore he says this mutter kushalo kadarka.
How is this different than Rashi, who also says it's a case of polypulmonary?
So I think the chiddush of the Rush is Rashi's case of polypulmonary was not the regular uterine lining falling out. It was like a stomp piece of flesh from who knows that they're falling out that had blood in it, just because we know it must have come out because of a maka. Meaning Rashi's case is not where the uterus prolapsed.
But the principle is the same.
It's interesting because the Rush Dafka based all this on rejecting Rashi. Now again, your kasha is the Beis Yosef, not the Rush, right? Because most people say the Beis Yosef have the wrong shot in the Rush. How is this different than Rashi? So Bedochak, I'll say that Rashi's case where a piece came out that didn't look like the uterine lining. And therefore, that was clearly just a terrible maka. Here's where a piece of the actual uterine lining fell out that looks like it's supposed to have damnida within and did. And therefore, you would have havmina that's usser, and your only matter is shalom kadarka. I think that's what you have to say. That it was two different kinds, two different looking pieces. Rashi was only matter, a piece that doesn't look like it's supposed to have damnida. And the Rush is not even a piece that looks like it's supposed to have damnida. But the Rama and everyone else say no. Say, if you look in the Lashon of the Rush, what did the Rush say? The Rush says she didn't stop seeing, meaning she kept seeing as long as these pieces were there. So the Beis Yosef says that means she kept seeing little pieces falling out of her body, which is definitely doesn't sound healthy to me. But they say, no, what it meant is, as long as the uterus was prolapsed, she kept seeing blood, right? And apparently this woman, she didn't just get her period once a month. She had gotten her period once a month, then she probably wouldn't have gone to the Rush with a Shiloh. She would have just done what every other woman does. But because of this condition, she somehow bled all the time, and now she didn't know what to do. She had to get divorced from her husband, whatever, so she went to ask the Rush, and the Rush says, if you bled all the time because of some hormonal imbalance or something, that would be called the normal weight. Meaning, normal weight doesn't mean average. It just means that, like, when it comes out the normal way. You know, if it's caused by hormonal imbalance, that's still called normal. But here, where it's coming out because of this prolapsed uterus, then that's not the normal way, and he was mocked to this woman. That's the Rush's psak. So they say, no, blood came out. And he was mocked to the blood that came out. Now the question is, why was he matter the blood that came out? Right? Why was he matter the blood that came out? So, let's just read in the Shulchan Aruch, and then I'll fill in some more details. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Gimel, starting at Echlishish Vafers, Votzi Abav Dam Tahora, V'cheinim Ras Adam B'chaticha, Filu Him V'kas V'adam V'koin V'inish Nagib V'sara Tahora. Right? That's Chali Peluye, the Mechaber Paskins against Tosos, that if she saw Adam B'chaticha, even if it was in cracks that tucked her flesh on the way out, like it went like up to the borderline and touched her flesh on the way out, she is still tahora. And like the Rush's reason, because even though damnida came out, it came out in an abnormal way. And then he continues like the Rush, a woman whose uterus fell out, and he interprets his way. Little pieces of flesh fell into the Beis Achitzon. And I guess when she did a bedika or a different time, she found them. These little pieces of flesh that separated is not a problem.
Okay, we can stop here. Says the... why? Because these are little pieces of flesh that are polypluye. You know what? I'll just read the end of the... Skip the Rambam, read the end of the Mechaber. Once the chatiz, when she heats on the chatiz, my impotion for loni mochu. This is only true if she soaked them in lukewarm water and they didn't melt, meaning to prove that they're real flesh and not just congealed blood. V'davka chatichos ketanos do mishal feres, and only if they're small chatichos, as small as a tube, v'chaticho gdol etzmei, afi lo raso klom fishi efshal psichos akar v'lo dam, afi lo menefesh v'nei mertzi raso. Here he brings a rule that we'll see again, and we'll get into more practical detail in Simon Kuf Tzadi Gimel. That there's a rule, ain't safe as a carrot blow down. If the uterus opens, then there's a chazaka, an almost unrebuttable chazaka, that the woman bleeds. That's why, for example, if a woman miscarries, she miscarries, even if there's no blood, even if we don't see any blood, which I don't think is a very common case. But if a woman miscarries, even if the miscarriage is a very early stage miscarriage and does not count as tumas yoledes, because it doesn't count as a person yet, and there's no blood, she's still a nida, because we assume if the uterus opens to expel something, then she has to bleed, and that's considered a normal way of bleeding. Because the principle that whenever the uterus opens, something comes out is a normal part of the way women bleed. Meaning, it's not a normal part of the menstrual cycle, but it's a normal part of, you know, part of the reproductive cycle process. And therefore, he says, where the heter is only when very small chatichos came out. Because if big chatichos had come out, that would be called psichos akever, and it would be a problem. Okay, here this is controversial, even though we're not going to get into too much of the mechaber shita here, but the shach, and Yudalf disagrees with the mechaber. He says, what do you mean? You only have to test things by soaking them to see if they're congealed blood, if they're just unidentified pieces. If they look like flesh, and are especially if you know she has a condition, you know why they're coming from, then you don't have to test them, because like you know already. Only like you see some like hard red thing, you don't know what it is. Then you have to test it to see if it's congealed blood. But here, if it looks like, if you know what it looks like, you know it looks like a piece of flesh, then you know it's not congealed blood, you don't have to test it. Okay, so that's a detail. Right, the detail is, are we choshesh that the chaticha is congealed blood, and the assumption is the chaticha is congealed blood, then that would be a totally different story. It's normal for blood to be congealed sometimes. So the mechaber says yes, and therefore you have to soak it to make sure it doesn't melt. And the shach says no. He says, no, that's just for like a stam red piece. You don't know if it's congealed blood or something else. But if it looks like a piece of flesh and you know why it came out, then you know it's not congealed blood. You know it's a chaticha. Okay, we'll leave that for now because, you know, most, certainly we Ashkenazim, are not going to paskin like the Mechaber. Says the Ramah in the middle here, v'afilu ras adam, right, says the Ramah, afilu ras adam, kol zman shechtiz beis achitzon shlo, as long as the pieces are in her beis achitzon, in the vaginal canal, outside of the Bein HaShinayim, so as she sees dam tehora de talina adam chatichos elu hol v'yadin avad leishenekar makoro mach mas maka who. So what does the Ramah say? It says the Ramah that even if she bleeds, it's okay. Meaning, even if blood comes out. What do you mean? If blood comes out, then how do we know where that blood came from? Maybe it's just regular menstrual blood. It says no, we have a tliya. Like by Dine Maka. Even if blood comes out, like she stam finds blood, then we assume the blood came from the chatichos. But the, what's the point of the Ramah? So here it gets, even if blood came out, she's still tahora. Even if pure blood came out of her body, she's still tahora. Right? This is one shot, second shot. Why is she still tahora? Because, let's take at least the Ramah. Because, why? Is she still Tahora? Because we assume that, anyone remember when blood, at what part of her body did the blood coming out make her a Nida? When it comes out into the open air of the world? That when she becomes a Nida? No, when it comes
through the Beinah Shinayim, the cervix, right? When it leaves the Makor and goes to the Beis Hachitzon. So, because we assume that... okay, here it's... it's a question of exactly how literally you take the Ramah. Okay, let's take it back for a second. This is what the Ramah and certainly all the Ashkenazic Achronim hold. Even if she later finds blood, meaning first she notices there's a prolapse, and then she finds blood, it's mutter. Ah, she stam found blood. Why if she stam finds blood, is it mutter? So here, it depends what, how you interpret the Ramah. What does the Ramah sound like? You're saying what's the basis of this heter? What does the Ramah sound like the basis of this heter is? What? Damaka. Damaka actually sounds like a little more like Rashi, right? Damaka, nothing to do with Kedarka. So it's machlok zachronim whether that's what the Ramah means or not. The Bach understood the Ramah means that, and therefore he shechted him, right? But, so, let's say there are three basic pshatim here, although we're not sure which achronim say which, because it depends who you ask. If you ask the Bach, the Ramah said one thing. If you ask the Shulchan Aruch Rav and others, the Ramah said something totally different. Even if you ask the Taz, the Ramah said something totally different. So one pshat is... maybe the kavana of the Ramah, right? And the Bach understood the Ramah this way, right? That this is a heter of the Makkah. After all, what's the Ramah saying? She has this terrible Makkah. Says, this terrible Makkah. You think it's Damnita? No, this is a terrible Makkah. Whatever blood comes out is blood from this injury, and is not regular menstrual blood. Okay, the tricky part is, the reason why most Achronim don't think that's what the Ramah means, is because then it has nothing to do with the context anymore. The whole context of the Rush, you had a heter of Shalom Kedarka, and it's all trying to explain the Rush. If this is the heter of Damaka, then what does that have to do with the Rush and Shalom Kedarka? So I'm not convinced, I didn't count, but I think most Achronim are not convinced that's what the Ramah means.
But isn't Rashi Svara that it, this can't be Dam Nida because it's not the way that Dam Nida is out? So in a sense, it is Kederek Dam Nida or not Kederek Dam Nida.
No, but the Ramah seems to be basing himself on the Rush is the problem. I mean, if you look at the Darki Moshe, he's arguing what the Rush meant. So if you told me the Ramah said this, that would be fine.
What I'm saying is there's a lot of similarity in the Kederek aspect.
Okay, there is a lot of similarity. Just one is an Iduay Milsa and one is a Heter. Meaning, there is a lot of similarity, right? Do you say that either way, it's a heter shalok kederek? The question is shalok kederek proving it's damaka, or shalok kederek saying even though it's damnida, it's still mutter? The Ramah here sounds like it's proving it's damaka. That just doesn't. It's similar, but it's not exactly. So I'm not convinced this is what the Ramah means. So what the Bach says, even though the Bach and the Ramah have technical differences between them, but says the Bach. And maybe the kavana of the Ramah is that, and maybe this is what the Taz means. It's not clear to me what the Taz means, but he says, what's the case? No. Because just like we are Tole b'maka, maybe the Ramah didn't literally mean. Or even if he did literally mean, maybe he's wrong, and we should say, just like we're Tole b'maka, after all, a woman has stam blood. How do we know it came from the maka? There's a principle of Tliya b'maka. It might not have come from a maka, but there's a principle of Tliya b'maka. If it's a strong matzah that you maka that you know bleeds, you're Tole b'maka. Just like we are Tole b'maka, this case is not a maka. We are similarly tole this, let me say even a little better. Just like in Simen Kof Pei Zayin, we assume this blood that we find came from the maka, and not, and not
menstruation. So too, in Simon Kuf Pei Ches, we assume that this blood came from the Chatichos, or let me say, came from the flesh, the Chatichos, flesh, pieces of her body, we'll call it Chatichos. Chatichos in the Beis Hachitzon and not from menstruation in the Makor. Meaning, what does this mean? And what this means is, this is what the Bach explains, and I think this, I really think this is probably the Ramah as well. He doesn't mean this is a din of Dan Makah. He just means a parallel. Just like in Dan Makah, how do you know this Dan is from the Makah? Maybe she happened to have Nida? No, we can assume it's from the Makah. Likewise here. How do you know where this Dan came from? On Monday, the uterus falls out. Falls out on the floor. It protrudes a little, right? However much. On Tuesday, she finds blood. How do you know this came from the protruding pieces of flesh that were in the Beis Hachitzon? Maybe she just happened to menstruate? The answer is Ratola. And the heter of the Ramah is based on two steps. Is based on this. Is based on step one, the dam went from the Makor to the Beis Hachitzon in a Chaticha. And therefore, it's not a problem. And then, step two, the dam went from the Beis Hachitzon to the outside, to the chutz, by itself. But if you think about this, this is perfectly fine. When it came out of the Bein HaShanayim to Beis Hachitzon, it was in a Chaticha, and that was not the Derech. And then later, who cares that it comes out by itself? Meaning, it already, halachically, it emerged in a way that's not the derech. So the going from Beis Hachitzon to the outside is halachically insignificant. We don't care. Right? So we assume, we find blood by itself. But what do we assume through the rule of Tliya? We assume, even though now we find it by itself, it didn't come from the Makor into the Beis Hachitzon by itself. It came from the Makor to the Beis Hachitzon in the Chaticha. And therefore, it has a heter of Shelo Kedarka. That is what I think is Pshat in the Ramah, and what the Bach says, and maybe what the Taz seems to be saying, yes.
Are the Chasichos still attached to her body?
According to Beis Yosef, obviously not. They fell out. According to Ramah, are these Chatichos attached to her body or not? It seems to me yes, although I can't prove it.
Okay.
It seems to me yes, although I can't prove it.
Something from within the uterus is basically poking out through the cervix and then starts bleeding.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So what do we assume? We assume when it came through the Bein HaShanayim, it came through Shelo Kedarka. How do we know this blood is the one that came through the Bein HaShanayim Shelo Kedarka yesterday with the flesh? Maybe this is different blood that she happened to menstruate today. The answer is because of Tola. And that's why the Ramah brings in Makah. So that's again, one pshat is we mamish think it's Dan Makah, not Dan Nida. The other pshat is that this is Dan Nida. Dan Nida. But when it went through the Bein HaShanayim, which is the cervix, the passage from the Makor to the Beis Hachitzon, it went through Shelo Kedarka. And therefore it's mutter. Now it flowed by itself, but it doesn't matter. It was mutter because it went through the Bein HaShanayim Shelo Kedarka. And the heter is that it passed through the Bein HaShanayim Shelo Kedarka. That's the heter.
This second shot is the Bach explaining what he thinks shot is in the rush, or in
yes.
The, okay,
I'm not talking about the Pesach. I'm just saying shot in the rush.
Okay,
okay, now it's a little bit of a question exactly what the Taz meant here. The Taz is definitely in this direction.
The Taz is definitely in this direction. You know what? The, Taz understood the Rambam this way, and this is the Taz's direction as well. The Taz and the Bach, and the Taz and the Bach say the same basic mahalach. The only difference is the Bach thinks he's rejecting the Rambam, because the Rambam meant regular makkah from Kuf Pei Zayin, and the Taz thinks he's accepting the Rambam, because the Rambam just meant it's parallel to Kuf Pei Zayin. There we're told by makkah, and here we're told with the dam that came out Shalom Kedarka. And if you say, how do you know maybe this is a different dam? The answer is we have Tliya. We assume it's the same dam. Here you have a big subtlety within the Taz, and I read the Taz many, many times, and I'm still okay. Well, let's just get through a few details, and then we'll see how hard it is to paskin. Okay, a few details. Number one, if it seems to be based on some sort of tliya, if it seems to be based on some sort of tliya, perhaps, although the Taz doesn't love, if it seems to be based on some sort of tliya, then what about if it's Shas Vesta? If it's Shas Vesta, are we also Tola? After all, we know, remember we said, Bishas Vesta or Bishas Onabeninis, we can't be Tola Pamaka. So how about here? So this is a big, let's just see some of the details according to Ramaz Derech. Details. So number one, are we tole even b'shas Vesta? Are we tole even b'shas Vesta? So here's a big machlokas. The Bach says no. The Bach says we're not tole b'shas Vesta, because after all, we could never be tole b'shas Vesta. And the Taz says yes. Why? Because the Taz seems to assume that this is much better than Tliya, which is why it was a little more suffocating to put the Taz there, or not. He says that that we know that this dam, he seems to assume that the Taz says we're totally even b'shas Vesta, because he seems to assume, it's not exactly clear, he seems to assume that it could be that maybe we think that the whole uterus, even though this is a piece of the uterus, prolapsed or something. He says, we know that the blood is coming from this part of the uterus that already came out. We know the blood is coming from this part of the uterus that already came out. That's not like a tliya. A tliya is like when there's regular menstruation and there's also an injury and we want to know what to be tola. Then we're not tola b'shas Vesta. But over here he says, no, the menstruation is shelo kedarka. And he says, when you have a woman who also has a nida cycle and also has a wound, then you can't be tola b'shas Vesta, because after all there's a wound but there's also a nida cycle. But over here, her nida cycle itself becomes shelo kedarka. So you can be tola all the time. Right? Says yes, why? Because the Nida cycle itself is Shelo Kedarka. Is Shelo Kedarka. Why? Because the normal way for a Nida is the uterus is inside and then bleeds and the blood comes outside. Here, first the uterus went outside and then the uterus bled. But even if the uterus bled, regular Nida blood, since first it went outside and then it bled, that's Shelo Kedarka. And therefore it's Mutter, even if it is menstrual blood. So then you can be totally even Mishas Vesta. Because even menstrual blood is okay in this case. That seems to be the svara of the Taz. A second detail that comes up, here is one detail, is this machlokes in the Bach and the Rama. Does she need a bedika b'shas nefilas hamakor? Okay. why would she need a bedika b'shas tefilas hamakor? Says the Bach, at the time her uterus falls out, she needs to do a bedika just to make sure there's no regular dam there. If she does a bedika when her uterus falls out and finds nothing, from then on, she can assume all the dam is coming out of the part that already fell out. But she has to do a bedika when her uterus falls out to make sure there's not, coincidentally, also menstrual blood to start with. And the Ramah says, no, she doesn't need to do that. Why should she think that there's menstrual blood to start with? So that's another machlokas, says the Bach. Yes, says the Ramah. No, and again, what's the basis of this? The basis of this is, the Bach says, this whole point is tola. Your tola, any blood, is what came out with the pieces of flesh. How do you know? Maybe regular blood also came out, so you have to do a bedika at the beginning to make sure there's no regular blood. And the Ramah says, no, you don't have to make it, do a bedika to make sure there's no regular blood. We have no reason to assume there was regular blood. And, let us leave it at that. So this is now, let's just bring this down to Inyan Psak. What are the questions we have to figure out? Inyan Psak, right? What are the problems? How come it's so hard to paskin? Number one is, do we paskin like the Rosh? Who does paskin like the Rosh? Of course, the Mechaber and the Ramah. Who doesn't? Who says we can't be maker like the Rosh because we're choshes for Tosfos? The Bach, quoted in the Shach. Right? The Shach says, Kosova Bach. I'm not talking about the fact that Bach had his own shot of the Rosh. The Bach also says, Surah Inlin your Mikesim Yishlahakel, came in the Gamdas Tosfos Kirish Rashi Ayasham, etc. So the Bach and the Shach say no. We can't be maker like the Rosh at all. Forget about what he meant. The Machaber and the Ramah and all the other Achronim say yes. Okay, but the next question is Mechaber versus Ramah, right? Is it, what if blood came out? The Mechaber's only make of Chatichos come out, right? What if blood came out, which is the common case, right? That's the difficult one. If blood comes out, then that's Machlokas, Mechaber, and Ramah. And then, even within the Ramah, there's another problem. What about, do you need a bedika bishas nefilas hamakor? Right? Maybe this heter only works if, when it first happened, you check to make sure there was no regular blood. But if you didn't check when it first happened, then anytime you see blood, you might have to say maybe that's from regular menstrual blood that was there originally. And number four, of course, is shas vesta. So you see why the Nevi Yehuda says only gedolei hador can paskin this. Because we have a lot of trouble figuring out what anyone means, and it's even more complicated than this, but this is what I tried to do, a summary, and we're not sure if we pass like the Rosh or not. And if we do pass like the Rosh, is that only if Chatichas fall out of its mutter, even blood comes out of its mutter, and if we are matter when blood comes out, is that only if you do the bedika when you first had the prolapse, to make sure that you were clean except for the prolapse, and then you can say any blood just came from the prolapse that is shaloka darka, or no. Even if you didn't do a bedika, you can assume any blood is from the prolapse. And can you make it even b'shas vesta? These are, and if you can't be making shas vesta, then you're dead. Because if the woman bleeds all the time, shas vesta comes, you're machmir, and she can never go to the mikveh again because she'll never be able to prove she stopped bleeding. She'll never get a clean bedika. So this is very difficult, and that's why nowadays, my understanding nowadays, even though I'm not an expert, is that we still have lots of nefilas hamakor nowadays. It's a very common health problem. But we don't have a lot of nida shaylas based on nefilas hamakor. That usually, even when a woman has nefilas hamakor nowadays, it doesn't create unnatural bleeding, maybe because we, you know, have ways of controlling it somewhat. There's no easy solution, but we have ways of controlling it somewhat so it doesn't start falling into pieces and falling on the floor, so that it doesn't start bleeding all the time. So nowadays, it's not, we don't get the shaylas all the time, but if we do, then we'll have to think about them, and it's very hard to know how to apply this sif.
Doesn't it also seem like, I mean, this is just another one, but is it like a really bad idea for them to be together at this time anyhow?
If
she has like a uterus inside of that area of the body?
Well, look, obviously, you know, if you ask a doctor, there's all different kinds of prolapses, right? You can,
yeah.
you, You can have a prolapse of a tiny bit, which maybe no one will even notice, etc. Won't hurt anyone. You can have a prolapse where your mom is coming out into the alveolum, and everything in between. So I have no idea what the doctors say. My understanding is that already before modern medicine, you know, already in Europe, you know, in the time of the Achronim, they invented something, it's called a pessary, which is, I don't know exactly how it works, but it's some sort of like plug that you just like stuff the uterus back in, and then, now obviously, to invent the right kind of plug, you need to know how to do it, but you don't need modern, like, 20th century science. So therefore, what most women do is they have a way of like keeping it where it belongs. Okay, it's gets complicated how exactly you're supposed to do it, but so nowadays, like most people, like they don't walk around with their uterus prolapsed, they try to keep it inside. If it's very bad, you can have a surgery to implant some sort of, you know, band that would keep it inside if necessary. And also nowadays, you know, the physical therapists have also come up with all kinds of itzas for before you actually get a prolapse, you know, making sure it doesn't, you know, trying to prevent it from happening. I don't think a physical therapist can cure it after it happens, but they can cure it before it happens. So nowadays it's not, you know, it's more under control. And I mean, the idea of a pessary is, it doesn't, it's not rocket science, is it?
No, it's a surgery.
It's just like a, yeah. But I guess they didn't have it in the time of the rush. or whatever, this woman didn't have it in the time of the rush. You know, it's, although it maybe goes back a long time. I don't look in the Wikipedia page.
I'm trying to clarify this. It's that something from inside the uterus, like the inside of the uterus is almost slipping out through the surface.
Yeah, it's like inside out, so, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I envision, actually, I'm not sure. Actually, no, I take that back. I'm not convinced. I admit my ignorance. I don't really have a good bakias in how this looks. I have tried to have a decent amount of what the Achronim are saying, but I don't have a great bakias of exactly how it looks. I'm counting on you. But nowadays, you don't really get a lot of shilas about this. My impression is that, you know, you can sort of control it enough that, not that it's, you know, the most pleasant thing to deal with, but I don't think you get a lot of helchos nida shilas for it. To the best of my understanding. Okay, so this is a very difficult piece. I'll just end with one thing. The famous Rav Shlomo Zalman article. The 60s or something, maybe. Remember in Siman Kuf Pei Gimel, we discussed whether a woman who had a short cycle and had trouble like getting pregnant, right? If you have a short cycle, then it could be by the time you get to the mitzvah, then it's too late to get pregnant, because you can only get pregnant when a woman ovulates, which is often around 2 weeks before her next period. So you can imagine, if a woman ovulates 2 weeks before her next period, and her cycle is 24 days, that means she ovulates 10 days after her last period, and it takes 12 days to get to mikvah, so she's in trouble. Right? So we discussed the whole question of could you, you know, forego Chomer Gevurah in that case or not. Rav Shlomo Zalman, I mentioned his famous article about this. He's one of the early people who wrote about it. And he paskened that you could not. You still have to keep Chomer Dravi Zeira. You can't compromise on Chomer Dravi Zeira. So what do you do for these people? So in his days, they didn't yet have medical treatments of hormones, etc. So he had an idea. He said, here's a good idea. This Nefilas HaMokar is really hard to figure out. But the beginning of Sif Gimel is Shvil Feres. That's pretty easy. A tube is a tube, right? No rocket science there. So he says maybe they could just implant a tube, and when they get their period, all the blood will come out through a tube, and then they won't be tamea, and then they won't have to worry about anything. Right? Again, I'm not sure. I never asked a doctor, like, exactly how do you put in this tube? How do you make sure that all the blood goes inside the tube and not outside the tube? But maybe he did it. Maybe it could work theoretically. No one ever tried it. But maybe you could just put in a tube, and all the blood will come through the tube, and that's the first line of Sif Gimel. And that seems non-controversial, right?
She'd never be Tamea.
She'd never have to do a Keep Hilchos Nida. Now, it might not be comfortable, I don't know. Like, maybe it's not worth it for a woman to do this just because she doesn't like going to the mikvah. But if it's the way for a woman to get pregnant, then people are willing to endure discomfort, perhaps. And it might be very annoying in many ways, but probably less annoying than standard fertility treatments that people do in order to get pregnant. So that was his idea. And he almost went with this idea. Again, he didn't write there if he explicitly checked, like with doctors, how to do it practically. But theoretically, he almost went with this idea. But then he got into trouble because of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav here. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav here has a Chakira even within Shofaris, has two ways of understanding the heter of Shofaris. Now, I admit, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav is not as explicit about this. Like, you have to be looking for it to notice it. But he says, I have a Chakira, two ways of understanding the heter of Shofaris. We thought the heter of Shofaris was pretty straightforward. Shofaris was a chatzitza. The blood doesn't touch the basar. It says bufsara. The blood has to touch basar. If the blood is in a tube and doesn't touch basar, then you're home free. Says the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, no, there are two ways of understanding the heter of Shofaris. And what were the two ways? He says, these two ways depend on whether the Rosh is right or not. According to the Rosh, the heter of Shofaris is because of Shelo Kedarka. But he says, according to Tosos, there is no heter of Shelo Kedarka. There's only a heter of Chatzitza. So according to Tosos, the heter of Shofaris is because of Chatzitza. And then, so if he had just said that, I might have said, there's no nafkamina, because there's a Chatzitza, Shelo Kedarka. So what's the difference? But then he takes it a step further. He says, now, again, you have to look at, if you want to look at the Shulchan Aruch HaRav inside, you know, you'll see I'm sort of elucidating a little. But he says, let's go back to the beginning of Gimel. Hechnisa shvoferes v'hotsia badam tahora. Does this sound like the suggestion Shlomo Zalman has, that you just insert a tube and all the period blood goes out of tube? What does the Lashon Shulchan Aruch sound a little like? Hechnisa, you stick in a tube and you take out dam with a tube. It sounds like the dam wasn't like coming out on its own through normal menstruation. You like stick a tube all the way into the uterus, find like some uterine lining on the wall there, scrape it off of the tube, and take it out. I mean, they actually do things not dissimilar to that, the diagnostic procedures. So says Rosh Shlomo Zalman, says, you know what, can you do me a favor, Tessie? He says, if the heter of Shvoferes is because of Chatzitza, then even regular menstrual blood is mutter if it comes through a tube. And his idea works. But if the heter Shvoferes is because of Shlo Kedarka, then if you just put a tube and the regular menstrual blood comes out through the tube, that doesn't work. That's an additional hitch that Shlomo Zalman says. But based on the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav says, it's only the Shvoferes only matter if it makes the blood come out. Not if the blood was coming out anyway. That is the Shulchan Aruch HaRav's chiddush. You got the board? Let me just put this on the board because I think that'll be easier. The heter of Shoferes. The fact that there's two ways to understand the heter of Shoferes, that is not the chiddush of Shulchan Aruch HaRav. Heter Shoferes. Dam Bishoferes. The tube heter. So one way of understanding is the Rosh, he says explicitly, it's because of Shelo Kedarka. The other way is the Tosos Heter. He also used the phrase Shelo Kedarka, but what he means by this is something very specific. He says it's the Heter of Chatzitza. Now, that's not a Chiddush. The Chiddush of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, which Shlomo Zalman is Koshish for, is that there's an Afmina. What's an Afmina? What if the idea of Shlomo Zalman, then any blood that emerges in the tube is, the blood's not Tahara, I mean, she's Tahara, let's just say as much. Right? No problem. The chiddush of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav is you could have said, no, the heter Shlo Kedarka, but if he merged in a tube, that's emerging Shlo Kedarka. The chiddush of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, add the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, he says, it's only called Shlo Kedarka if it comes out just emerges in a tube. It's only called shlokh dark if it comes out because of the tube. That's the chiddush of the Shulchan Aruch Rav. In which case, if regular menstrual blood, you happen to sew a tube into place, and regular menstrual blood comes out through it, then there's no heter, because that's not shlokh darka. The chiddush of the Shulchan Aruch Rav is that it's not enough that it passes through the Beni Shinayin abnormally. The reason it comes out needs to be abnormal, not just the way it comes out. That's the chiddush of the Shulchan Aruch Rav. The chiddush is that it's not enough that the way it emerges is abnormal, but it's only mutter if the reason it emerges is abnormal. That's the chiddush, which I might never said on my own. I might have said, Tosa says chatzitza, the Rush says the way it emerges is abnormal. Lamai said no nafkamina. He says no, for Tosos it depends on the way it emerges. For the Rush, it depends on the reason it emerges. And therefore, if you just put in a tube, so regular menstrual blood every month will go through that tube, the reason it emerged was normal. And therefore it's not a heter. And that's why Shlomo Zalman, again, I don't know if he checked if it was practical, but maybe before he got to that step, he just withdrew his heter and he decided he couldn't rely on that heter.
So would the Rush require that it's also hollow, or just so long as you're the one who caused it to come and not it, the body just doing it itself?
The Pashat Pshat is that the Rush would not require that it's also hollow. After all, that's why he's Matar Pali Peluye. And some people say in the Taz, he's Matar even if it's not Pali Peluye, if you can prove it emerged for an abnormal reason. But that's true.
So by extension of that, any procedure that people say, like, if you have to person unconscious and you're opening the psichas hamakor a certain amount, if you're going in there and then causing blood to come out, according to this Rashi, it should be good.
Right. The problem is that the Achronim write that anytime there's psichas hamakor, that's considered an independent normal reason for bleeding.
But you know, shouldn't according to this Rashi be that if you're the one who's opening it, then it should be
no, good? I hear the taina, but I think the Achronim might be choshe that all psichas hamakor, even if the psicho is for an abnormal reason, a psichas hamakor is considered a normal reason. I understand some places draw the lines in, you know, unpredictable places.
And the shofaris didn't go into
So basically what the Shulchan Aruch Rav says is, according to Tosos, it's enough that the shofaris goes to the Bein HaShinayim, and it goes through the Bein HaShinayim and the shofaris. For the Rush, the shofaris needs to go all the way into the makor and take out the blood.
But then you have a
no, because the shofaris is so small that it's not psichas hamakor. That's what we'll mention briefly, and we'll come back to it. Okay, I'll come back to that.
So there are, like, hygiene products on the market that would basically pop for women from Tarsus Shrufa Lugamre, according to Tosos.
I'm not sure, because the problem with, Tosos is only going to work if you make sure all the dam goes inside the tube and not outside the tube. So I'm not sure how practical that is. And also, I'm not sure how practical it is to, like, you know, put whatever you're going to tubes, leave those tubes in your body a long time, whatever. Like, I'm don't try it on my achrayas. Anyway, theoretically, but that was Rosh Hashanah's point. According to Tosos, he felt comfortable he could potter all women from Milchus Nida. He only wanted to potter women who were B'shas Adchak, but he could have pottered all women. Although, again, I'm not promising any of this is practical. It seems easier said than done, but I don't know, you'll say, if you're a doctor, does it seem easier said than done to you?
To put in a tube? I'm trying to think of anybody that would do it without, like, giving her, like, a massive infection.
Yes, I mean, there are such things as catheters for different things, etc., but they're very tricky. They're not pushing, are they?
I mean, you run the risk of infection with a catheter.
Right, you need a lot of hashgacha on these things. Yeah, so it's in theory, maybe, okay, if you really want, but Lamaiser Shlomo Zalman didn't. Okay, now let's go on a little, let's quickly finish up the simon, and let's move on. So we see this is very complicated. If you leave a little confused, then that's realistic. If you leave a lot confused, then I apologize, I tried to leave you only a little confused, but this is a very complicated sif. The rest of the simon is fairly straightforward. Dalet, kol dam hayotz min isha bein lach ben yavish tmeya. Any blood that comes out of the uterus, whether it's dry or
or moist is tameya, meaning dry blood or congealed blood is just as much dam nida as moist blood. Velo od ela filu yatsu mimena, so meaning if liquid blood comes out, that's classic nida. If something comes out, which is a red solid, which you know is dry blood, that's also nida. Not only that, afilu yatsu mimena, this is all from the Gemara, tsuras birya. Even if like a shape of something comes out, come in klipos, like peels, or come in saros, or hairs, or come in yavchushin adumin, like little bug-looking things, it's also tameya. Meaning, even if it's a certain shape, and you might think, come on, anything that shape is not dried blood, it must be something else. No. Even something with a certain shape could also be dried blood. It could be that coincidentally, or not coincidentally, or for some reason in physics or biology, the blood dried into various shapes. So anything that comes out of the uterus, you have to check because it might be dried blood. But if you're not sure what it is, then what do you do? The answer is she's tameya, v'hu, she'yinu mochim, and then tomei slays, I'll get sure and sober my imposhim. There's a test. What's the test? The test is you have to soak it 24 hours in lukewarm water. If you soak it 24 hours in lukewarm water and it melts, that proves that it was dried blood. If you soak it in lukewarm water 24 hours and it doesn't melt, then that proves that it was actually a piece of flesh or something else, and it's not blood, because any dried blood would melt in 24 hours of lukewarm water. So that's the litmus test. So it's tameya if it would melt, and if not, then it's okay. How do you know what counts as lukewarm water? You have to keep them lukewarm in the whole 24 hours. I'm not exactly sure how you do that without modern technology, but, I mean, unless you happen to be in a perfect season, whatever, but you have to keep them lukewarm all 24 hours. And how hot is lukewarm? Like water you draw from the river in the summer, or you draw it from the well and you put it in the house and the heat of the house heats it up. It's like summer water, right? How hot is summer water? Meaning, not if you just draw it from a deep well and it's freezing. The aremikva is cold even in the summer, I think. But it means that then you put it in the house and I guess it gets like summer temperature. But it's summer room temperature, right? You put in the house and they had no air conditioning then, right? You put in the house in the summer. I mean, nowadays we usually call it room temperature. In their days, room temperature was different in the summer and in the winter. And different in the winter if you lit the fire or didn't, right? So in the winter, you can't talk about room temperature because it's super freezing unless you light a fire and then everyone lights a different size fire. But in the summer, no one lights a fire and they hadn't yet invented fans and air conditioning. So you knew what room temperature was. Room temperature was summer temperature. Which is pretty hot. Now, of course, it's tricky because it depends where you live. But summer temperature. Yeah? That is a tricky. I wonder, like, do they mean you have to know how hot it is in the summer in a certain place, or do they mean every place in time uses their summer weather? And if they meant every place in time, is that just, like, in order for Chazal to make it doable, or because the test actually depends on your place and time. So I don't know.
Well, Maisa does it. I mean, I don't know if Rebbe's ever done this test.
No, no one does this.
I can't imagine it has to be so exact to test this thing.
The problem is that every test is only accurate to a certain point. And once you I don't know. You know, obviously, if you ask a modern-day scientist to devise a test, they could probably devise a better one. But I don't know. The Rama adds, Stam poshrim einachan yosefim is harok. Stam poshrim is no hotter than saliva. Now, Yosef, I always thought saliva was body temperature.
As opposed to, I mean...
Oh, it's been saliva before you spit it or after you spit it?
Like, how long is it
right.
in your mouth for?
Right. Well, even before it's in your mouth, it comes from your body.
I mean, like, while it's in your mouth and then you spit it out versus, like, it being secreted and then you spit it out immediately, I suppose you could get a temperature difference.
Oh, okay. Anyway, and the Shach goes so far as to say that any poacher mentioned anywhere in the Shas or Shulchan Aruch is the temperature of saliva, which again is a little unclear. I couldn't find in the modern post. Some of the modern, we don't do this nowadays, Lisa. I've never seen anyone do it. The modern post can don't go into it so much. But anyway, if they're so hard that in 24 hours they don't melt in lukewarm water, then tahora because it's a piece of flesh. If it's so soft that it does melt in 24 hours in lukewarm water, then tameya because it was dried blood. Now, even if they would melt, if you crush them with your fingernail, if they don't melt in 24 hours of lukewarm water, it's still okay. Meaning, even if it melts when you crush with your fingernail, you might see, doesn't that show dried blood? No, that shows it was some other kind of flesh that you can melt with pressure. But it's still not dried blood. Okay, this is just logical. The test, meaning the pressure of squeezing it with your fingernail, is more than the pressure of soaking 24 hours. So therefore, if it gets squished, melts with your fingernail, that doesn't prove that it's blood. But if it doesn't melt when you squish it with your fingernail, that proves that it's not blood. So therefore, if you just want to save yourself 24 hours and take your chances, squish it with your fingernail. If it melts, then it doesn't really prove it's blood, but you might have ruined your chances to do the other test. If it doesn't melt, then you know it's flesh and you're okay. Again, I haven't seen people do this nowadays for whatever reason. When do we say that if you have a piece that's so hard that it doesn't melt, that she's tahora, that's when the piece is dry and doesn't have any blood on the surface. But if the piece has blood on the surface, remember we had a picture over there of a piece with blood on the surface, even a little blood on the surface, then she's tmeya, because that's regular blood. And blood that's on the surface of a piece is considered normal. It just coincidentally came out with this piece, or maybe the blood was coming out and the piece came with it. So therefore, she is tmeya. If a bunch of pieces came and half of them melted, half of them didn't, then you don't say, well, one half proved the other half or the other half proved the one half. You say half of them were blood, half of them weren't, and she's tmeya, because some of it was blood. If she has a certain kind of thing come out of her body, she checked three times, it didn't melt. Klal didn't melt at all. Meaning, even if 100 times it came out and didn't melt, if the 100 first time she checks and it does melt, then it's dam, she's tmeya. The Ramah means if she checked three times, the chazaka, that whatever comes out of her that looks like this is not dam. So from now on, she doesn't have to check, she can just go with the chazaka. She just throw it in the garbage and not check, because she can assume it's the same thing it was the last three times. Because she has proven that these things are not dam, they're just pieces of flesh from some injury in her body. And when can she rely on this chazaka? Only if she has a veses, and now it's not the time of the veses. Because it's like tliya b'maka, in a maka, she'in yadur shemotzi adam, where you can only be mekel, if she has a veses, and it's not the time of the veses. Here, this is a big machlokas. The shach says it's not true. She could be told all the time. If chazaka three times, she could be told all the time. And the Rama thinks not. Right? So, obviously, if she checks it each time, and it's hard, then it's, and doesn't melt, it's mutter. Where the question is, can she skip the bedika? So the shach thinks, once three times comes out and it's hard, it doesn't melt, for the rest of her life, anything like that, she can skip the bedika across the board, because the chazak of three times is very strong. The Ramah thinks the chazak of three times is not so strong, so she can only skip the bedika the rest of her life if she has a veses and now it's not the time of her veses. But if she doesn't have a veses, or she has a veses and now is the time of her veses, then she needs to check whether it melts or not. Okay, again, these are not common things that come up all the time nowadays. The last sif vav b'medvar mershitzrichem b'dika b'shriya. When do we say you do this test based on soaking? B'ampelos k'min klipos or saros. If what comes out is like a peel or like a hair of a chatichas dam, but if it looks like a piece of blood, it doesn't have any special shape, it just looks like a piece of blood, then even if it's hard, it doesn't melt, it's tmeya. This is the opinion of the Ravid. The Ravid says if it looks like a regular piece of blood, then even if it's hard, it's tmeya. And, you know, the fact that it looks like a piece of blood overrides the fact that it didn't melt. The Yesh Omer, but the Baal Amor thinks, in his Hasagas, the Ravid's Valei Nefesh, that even in this case, you need to test it, meaning you can test it with soaking, and if it doesn't melt, you're tahora. Okay, so this is a machlokas. The Ravid thinks that if it looks like a piece of dam, it's more chomer, and there's no test for it, it's automatically tmeya. The Baal Amor thinks it doesn't matter what it looks like, you can always do the test. The Shach says, we pass like the Ravid. He brings many writers like the Ravid. We pass like the Ravid, that if it looks like a piece of dam, then you don't do any tests, it's automatically tmeya. The last thing he points out, okay, this really we're going to come back to a little later, but I'll just point out this rule here. There's a rule of
This is Beis Yosef's kasha. There's a rule of ein psichas hakever below dam. Right?
The rule is ein psichas hakever below dam, meaning anytime anything comes out, anytime a woman miscarries, ein psichas hakever below dam, anytime a woman miscarries, even if we don't see any blood, we assume blood came out, and that's normal for a miscarriage, and she's tamea. But what's the problem?
The problem is the sugya we started with, right? The sugya says that dam b'chaticha is tahora.
What do you mean? How can the blood inside the chaticha? For Tosfos, it was totally inside the chaticha. For the Rush and Rashi, it was in the folds of the chaticha, in the creases, the crevices. How could that be tahora? If a chaticha came out, that means she miscarried something. There's psichas hakever, kever meaning the uterus. And if there's psichas hakever, then there must have been regular blood that also come out because we have a chazaka, the ain't psichas hakever below dam. Just to be fair, the Rambam doesn't paskin this, machlokas tanoim, but all the other we shown in paskin ain't psichas hakever below dam. This is the Beis Yosef's famous kasha.
The Pesach is what we call the Shinai?
Yes, yes. If the uterus opens, then she must bleed real need of blood. Yet, we have this whole sugya of heter chaticha. So what's the answer of the Beis Yosef? The answer of everyone? The answer is no problem. The answer is, this is a big opening, and this is a small opening. There's a big opening of the uterus always has blood. But a small opening of the uterus doesn't necessarily have blood. If you don't see any blood, it's okay. Or if you see blood into the crevices, that's okay according to the Rush. You know, that's big versus small. And this is muskim. I think everyone agrees. In the Rambam holds yesh psichas keva, it doesn't hold from this rule, right? But we paskin that ein psichas hakever, a big psicha below dam. Every big psichas hakever has dam. Now the truth is that rule that every big psichas hakever has dam is not such a commonly applied rule because it's really true. Meaning, every time there's a big psichas hakever, the woman sees dam, so she doesn't go to ask the rabbi whether she has to assume she saw dam or not. Because it's really, it's a common sense rule. But, Lu Yitzur, she had a big psichas hakever and didn't see dam, which is rare. She would go to the rabbi and say, I had a big psichas hakever, I didn't see dam. The rabbi would say, we assume there was dam, you just didn't notice. And she's tmeya. But if there's a small psichas hakever, then it's not a problem. The only problem is, how do we know what's big and what's small? We have no evidence from Shas at all we have very little evidence what's called big, what's called small, because we know there must be some chatira that's small. That doesn't help us, because chatiras come in all sizes. So how do we know what's big, what's small? Here there are two opinions. It could be only one of which you've seen. What's the opinion of the Beis Yosef and the Mechaber right here? That what's big, what's small? Ah. Because we know there's one thing that's small in Shas. What must be small? The Shvaferis. After all, why is there a problem with Psichas HaKever by the Shvaferis? Must be Shvaferis is small.
Unless it doesn't go through the Shinai.
Unless you say that it only has to go to the borderline and you don't count the borderline or something, so he didn't seem to assume that. But it has to go at least to like the border being a Shinai, and maybe that's already Psichas HaKever.
Also, according to the Rush, it has to go.
According to the Shavnar Parab, yeah. Okay, so basically, what's big and what's small? There are two opinions. What is the gedder of big and small? One opinion is the Mechaber and the Shach agrees to this and the Taz agrees to this. They say that small is like a Shvoferis. Ah, what kind of Shvoferis? Well, the smallest Shvoferis. How do they know? It's not that they know that the definition of small is Shvoferis. It's that they want to be on the safe side. What they say is that shvoferes dak. And they even say dak, shevedakim, right? The thinnest of the thinnest tubes is called small. And anything gadol mizeh is safek big. It's not that they know anything more than shvoferes dak, shevedakim is called a big psicha. Is that they have no idea where to draw the line between a big psicha and a small psicha. So we know anything the size of the smallest tube is small. Because it's referred to the Gemara, and that's okay. Anything bigger than the smallest tube, we have no idea. And if we don't know, then we have to be machmir.
That's the opinion of the Machaber right here, and the Shach and Taz, a few places in this Simon agree with him. If you don't believe me, let's just say, for example, the Shach Sifkat Yud Bey says, Shofar is Dak Shabadakin. And the Taz Sifkat Vav says, Shofar is Dak Shabadakin. Okay. The Gra here suggests something else. Says the Gra, in the last line of Gra here, in the last Sifkatan of Gra, he starts with the Mechaber. Right? He quotes from the Yisiosei, fine. So you see the last line of Gra, im hichaticha v'chule, likod im hichaticha, she'ein mefor shir chaticha l'psichas akever. It's not mefor shir anywhere. What's the size of a piece that's considered big p'psichas akever and what's small? But, who knows all those? The Gra knows all those. And we all should also. But it says the Gra, Avol per zayin to olos amrinon, ein l'nefeilem psichas akever ad shi'agilu rosh kapika. A nefel, a miscarriage, is not considered psichas akever unless its head, yagilu rosh, the igul of the rosh, right, the round size of the head is as much as a pika. A pika is some part of the weaving process, and the all the effort assumed the shear is an etzva, the thickness of a finger. That's a lot more than for first doctor the doctor, right? So he says yagilu rosh tepika. That's, and he seems to have a good point, meaning we have no idea what the getter psichas akever is, but in the Mishnah Olos, you use the phrase psichas akever, right? Ein l'nefelim, okay, he says v'chule, but if you look in Olos, right? Do you believe me? It's true. It says in Olos that, here it is. Ein l'nefelim psichas akever ad shi'agilu rosh kepika. Right now, I wouldn't on my own know how big a pika was, but everyone who worked in textile manufacturing in the old days knew exactly how big a pika was. And that's the kushatvia. It's the stick that they used for a spinning. Not meaning going on a stationary bicycle. Spinning meaning the process of... You ever wonder how, like, wool becomes thread? Each piece of wool is this long. So spinning is the process where you take a gazillion pieces of linen or cotton, right? Cotton doesn't come on a spool, right? If you open a spool of thread, it would be like, I don't know, like a mile long, or not a mile, but it would be very long. Cotton plant is only this big. How does it get that way? So they take fibers of wool or cotton or linen or whatever it is, and there's something called spinning, which is that you have some machine, don't ask me how it works, where it takes all these tiny fibers and it spins them together so that they twist around each other unbreakably strong and form a mile-long thread, which as you spin, you twist onto the spool of thread. And then you use that for the rest of the weaving or sewing or whatever it is. How do we get our threads? Even nowadays, it's just not spun by hand. But how do we get our threads? You go buy a spool of thread. Or you go buy a wool suit, which is made by weaving, right? Spools of thread, you know, this way and that way. How do they get that spool of thread from a sheep? The sheep didn't have such long hair. The answer is they spun it. Okay, so the spinning wheel, there's something called a kush, which is a sort of stick that does some part of the spinning process, which is already beyond my familiarity with textile manufacturing. And that is a pika, and that is the minimum size for a psichos hakever. And even though the Mefarshim on Olos don't say exactly how long it is, all the Achronim assume it's an etzba, which is a lot big, much bigger kula, right? It's a lot thicker than the thinnest straw you can find. There are very thin straws out there. Now, so the question is, and is it obvious the Gra's right? Why didn't everyone agree with the Gra? Don't tell me that the Mechaber didn't know Olos. What? No, but psichas akever, einlin feilim psichas akever, ad shi'agilu rosh kepika. I hear the title, although the original sugya of maybe bani feilim, okay, fair enough. I thought that the main reason why not everyone agreed with the Gra was a little different,
was that the context is not Hilchus Nida there. The context in Olos, who cares if Psichas Akever in Olos or not? The question is, the Nefel is dead, right? And he has Tumas Meis. Is he Mitami the house? So the answer is, if he's not open, if there's no opening between the uterus and the house, he's not Mitami the house. If there's an opening, if the door opens, then the Nefel's Mitami the house. How do we know how open the door of the uterus has to be for the Nefel to be Mitami the house? It's only Psichas Akever if it's the size of a pika. Although you're right, it's definitely more complicated than that. Okay, anyway, but either way, you're going to say it's something unique to the Olos context, so that's why not everyone agrees with the Gra, but there is another sheet, though, which is the Gra, says the Gra, that he says, look, I know it's a different context, but it's the same phrase, right? So says the Gra that Kipika is big, Pachos mi Pika is small, okay? Halacha lemaisa, what would happen if, we're not going to go to Yosef's case yet, although maybe I'll tell you, what would happen if a woman miscarried a small chaticha without blood, which was bigger than the thinnest shvoferis, but smaller than a pika? And the answer is, we are machmir, like the Shulchan Aruch and the Taz and the Shach, against the Gra, and even though there's other people, it's not only the Gra. But lemaisa, we'd be machmir and say she's tmeya. The more interesting question, which we'll come back to when we see the Pesach Teshuva later on, is what if the woman didn't miscarry? What if the doctor inserted an instrument that was bigger than a shofaris daksha b'dakin, but smaller than a pika? Right? That's maisa b'chol yom. Right, Yosef? Meaning, most instruments are bigger than a shofaris daksha b'dakin, but most instruments are smaller than a pika. So what would be in that case? So we'll see that we're going to poskin, we being, I'm not promising everyone in the entire world, but I think most modern-day poskim, poskin, that then you can be makel. If it's a miscarriage or a chaticha that's between a shosef daksha b'dakin and a pika, we're machmir. But if it's a doctor's instrument, which is not the classic case of the Gemara, psichas akever, after all, we're not sure if psichas akever includes doctors. Maybe psichas akever only includes miscarriages. So if it's a doctor, then we're making like the Gra, and we assume any doctor's instrument up to a pika, which is 99% of, I just made up the number, which is the vast majority of all instruments the doctor would put inside, are smaller than a pika, because to the best of my knowledge, you need like serious anesthetics to put in something bigger than a pika that really hurts. That's not a normal thing to do. Only for very, very specific cases and only under anesthetic would the doctor stick in something bigger than a pika.
And they'll be using dilators to make it bigger and bigger and bigger, so you'll know.
Yeah, I'm saying you notice, right? It's a rare thing. It's not routine at all. Only in a very rare circumstances would the doctor put in something bigger than a pika. And therefore, nowadays, generally, if the doctor puts something into the uterus, we're mako, based on the gra. So for miscarriages, for things coming out, we're machmer like the machaber. For the doctor putting in instruments, we're makel like the gra. And we'll come back to that. We'll see more makoros about it. This is just foreshadowing. Okay, let's take at least a little bite of Siman Kuf Pei Tes.
In labor, this comes up also.
What?
In labor, this also comes up.
So in labor, this is much more serious because in labor, everything I just said is when you're not in labor. Right? When you're not in labor, a pika is like this or something. I don't know if it's like maybe like this. Right? This is an awfully large thing to stick into someone's body. Meaning that is not normally done, and if it's done, it is like a surgery. It's not like a routine procedure. That's if a woman's not in labor. If a woman's in labor, then this is klum, right? The baby comes out. Babies are big. Yachasit to instruments. So
defining at what stage.
Right. So when it comes to labor, at what stage of labor do we say in psichas akever blo dam? Not a miscarriage, like a regular labor. In the end, it's going to open up super wide because the whole baby is going to come out. So at what stage in labor do we say in psichas akever blo dam? Or what procedures when you're in labor are in psichas akever blo dam? We're going to save for later because there's a whole simon about labor. So we'll save that for later. It's a big machlokas. If you're actually going to labor before we get there, then you can ask me. And if not, we'll wait till we get there. Okay.
Simon Kof Pei Tes is, everyone here is married? Okay, so we know the basics of Simon Kof Pei Tes already. I mean, unlike Simon Kof Pei Tes, where, you know, you can be married for 100 years and never have heard the halachas of, you know, all kinds of things that are not common parts of life anymore. Kof Pei Tes is a lot of very basic things. Obviously, as we get into the Simon, we'll see some very rare things. But the beginning of Kof Pei Tes, hopefully you remember from your Chassan class, because this is just like, you know, Judaism 101. Kof Pei Tes, kol isha she'en laves kavua, choshesh es liyom shloshim l'riyasa. What do we call that, of course? Onabenus, right? Any woman without a vest kavua has to worry about the onabenus. Onabenus is tam lashim, the average period. The average period is 30. Okay, I never did a ton of medical research, but I think most doctors assume that it sounds more or less reasonable, right? You know, it's, again, I have no idea if there's ever researched it, but it's they're going to come to approximately the same answer. Of course, we don't know how to define 30 yet, but every woman without a veskavua has to keep on a baininess. She has veskavua 20, 25, what have you, then she worries about her veskavua. Okay, this is the most serious part of vestos. I don't mean most complicated practically, but most serious halachically, that if you have a veskavua, you worry about your veskavua. That's very serious. And if you don't have a veskavua, you worry about your own abaneness, and you take that very seriously. Where do we get this from? Well, vestos are all over the Masechet. Own abaneness is actually not mefurish in Shas. If you open up the Rambam, I don't think you'll ever meet an own abaneness. If you open up the Rif, I'm pretty sure you'll never meet an own abaneness. However, in the Ravid, it has own abaneness, and then from the Ravid, and the Ramban, and the Rashba, and the Rush, and I think after the Ravid, basically all the Rishonim adopted this idea of onabeinus. And we paskin as, you know, pretty much as a vadai, we have to be chosh for onabeinus. What's the mucker of this? The mucker is, if you remember, at the end of the first parak of Nida, talked about a guy who goes on the road, right? What if he comes home? Does he have to check if his wife's a Nida or not? So if it's before her Vesas, no. If it's after her Vesas, then he has to assume she became a Nida. What if she has no Vesas? So it depends if it's in the owner or not. Rashi, that means within 30 days, he assumes she's not a Nida. After 30 days, he has to be chosh she is a Nida. So we see from there that the guy who comes back from the road, after 30 days, has to suspect his wife's a Nida. The Gemara didn't say 30 days, but Rashi does, and everyone believes him. Right? So the Gemara says, Tochol Nasa, there's an ona of a woman without a vesses where you have to worry she might have gotten her period. Now, what's the chiddush of the Rishon, Ravid, and the later Rishon, you know, most Rishonim? The Gemara says if a guy comes back from a trip, he has to worry his wife might have gotten her period after 30 days. It never says that the woman has to refrain from tashmish on the 30th day or do bedik on the 30th day. Right? That didn't say in the Gemara. But the Rishonim, meaning from the Ravid and on, make a reasonable extrapolation. Say, if the husband has to check and be careful when he comes home after 30 days, then, if he is home, the wife has to check and be careful after 30 days. So that shows that on the 30th day, she has to keep a veses. Okay, it's not obvious, but that is, especially since maybe the only reason the husband has to worry is because the period might have come on day 30 or 29 or 28 or 27 or 26 or 25 or 24 when he was away. If the woman already knows it didn't come on day 24, 25, 26, 27, 20, 29, who says she has to suspect day 30? The odds aren't so high. I mean, I might have said, you know why? Because each day is like a few percent. And when you get to day 30, it goes from 49% to 51%, so you have to worry. And that doesn't mean that it's going to happen on day 30. Okay, you could have said a lot of things. And that's probably what the Rambam would say in the Rif. Lemaisa, we pass going to own a bane of this.
As we get closer to 30 and it didn't happen, and the percent goes up.
Right, the truth is the Shulchan Aruch Rav thinks that according to many Rishonim, you don't have to be poorish on day 30, because like there's not strong odds it'll happen on day 30, but you have to bedik on day 30 to make sure it didn't happen any of the days beforehand. But that's not lahalacha. I hear the time, the odds go up every day. I mean, but not that it'll be dafk on that day, right?
But that's just the, right, because after 31, you don't
know. Yeah. It's funny, if you had said from day 30 on you have to be poresh,
that would have been a big chumra. It would have been worse. Okay, lemaisa, it's not so clear if there's an own debate in this. It never says that word anywhere in Shas, and it's not in the Rambam, the Rif, but it's in all the later Rishonim, and we paskin that we're choshish for own debate in this. The question is, a few questions about Onabainidus. It seems very simple, but the first question is, when is the Onabainidus? Anyone know how many opinions there are in the Echronim? Which day is the Onabainidus? What?
Two.
Three, very good. There are three opinions in the Echronim. When is Onabainidus? Okay, what are the three opinions? Okay, who says the month?
The Shach.
The Shach is a big chiddush. It really didn't sound that way from anyone until the Shach, although I think the Shach would say, no, that's what they all meant. Isn't it obvious? Right? He says, wait, 30 days, you think they meant to count days? They meant to look on the calendar. If it was Yudal, the Cheshvan, then it's Yudal Kislev. Everyone knows what they meant by 30 days.
And that's how he interprets the Gemara also. The
Pashtos, yeah. The Gemara actually just says Onasa. It doesn't even say the word 30 days. That's only in Rashi. The whole Gemara is based on the word Ona, which on Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, and Rashi says it means 30 days. So you'd say, right, everyone knows that by 30 days they mean a month. Come on, who cares about 30 days? They mean a month. Okay, and where does he get that from? He gets that from the fact that in many places in Shas, it seems to assume there's a Vesas for the same day of the month. So if it, what we call Vesas Chodesh, if there's a Vesas for the same day of the month, they say if you're Chodesh 30 days, isn't obvious they mean the same day of the month? Come on. Often, Chazal say 30 days, they mean day of the month. So that's not a crazy thing. So that's the Shach. Says the Shach that it means Yom HaChodesh, which could be either 29 days later or 30 days later, depending on what kind of month it is, right? No February. There's only two options. The Shach. What do the Taz and most poskim say? Is the Taz here or only a little later? What do most Echronim say? What do most Echronim say? It means what kind of? Which it means day 30,
counting,
including both endpoints, right? Including meaning. Say better. We can say this much clearer. Day 30, meaning 29 days later, right? If the day you got your last period is day 1, day 30, meaning like, how old is a baby when he gets his bris mila?
8 days
old, which means 7 days after he's born. If a baby's born on Wednesday, assuming he's healthy, then his bris mila is on Wednesday. A lot of people get confused about this. People who are not good at math. But the 8th day means 7 days later, right? They always say, if he was born on Wednesday, doesn't he have to have bris on Thursday? He says, no, that's 8 days later, that's the 9th day. So here's where it gets tricky, because it all depends how you say it, right? If I say, right, if I say, God created the world, and on the 6th day he made Adam, that's true. If I say, God created the world, and 5 days later he made Adam, that's also true, right? So when we say 30, do we mean 30 days later, which is the 31st day, or do we mean 30th day, which is 29 days later? So most Achronim say day 30. Who says it means day 31, 30 days later? The Chavos Das. It's actually, I don't think you would have found it on this page, probably from Chassan classes, but the Chavos Das, he's not the only one. The Baal Kitzur Shulchan Aruch in his Sefer Lechem Asimla on Hilsi Golsi, but mostly the Chavos Das, he says it means day 31, which is 30 days later. And, you know, you can't prove or disprove either one. Like, what does it mean, 30 days? Does it mean 30 days later or on the 30th day? I don't think there's a way to prove one way or the other. You know, you just have to go by Masorah. So the Chavos Das thought, Pasha, that it meant the 31st day, 30 days later, while the other Achronim thought it was Pasha that it meant the 30th day, which is 29 days later. Meaning, and of course, according to the Shach, it's 29 or 30 days later, depending if the month was Malay or Chaser, right? Or the Shach, if you get your period in Iyar, then Onabainidus is 29 days later. But if you get your period in Sivan, then Onabainidus is 30 days later. And if it happens in Kislev, then you better check your calendar. The just to illustrate it, to make sure, right, if you're ever teaching someone and you want to make sure that who's not like a math person, you want to make sure they're with you, the easiest way to illustrate this is if you last period was Monday, then the onabaininess would be, according to Rov Achronim, Tuesday, right? Because 29 days later is 4 weeks plus 1 day later. According to the Chavos Das, Wednesday. And according to the Shach, Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on how the calendar worked out and how many days were in the month. Did I make a mistake?
Wouldn't Shach be Monday or Tuesday?
What?
Oh, 29 days.
Yeah. Okay. 20 days later. Okay. That is the first important machlokes. How do we paskin about this? So, here it gets a little tricky. To the best of my knowledge, no one paskins like the Shach, but that's not necessarily, that's hard to decide whether we paskin like the Shach, because anyway we're choshish for the Yom HaChodesh in normal circumstances. But my impression is that even if you would have a rare circumstance where for some reason you wouldn't be choshish for the Yom HaChodesh, which I'm not sure I can think of a good one offhand, we don't pass on the Maisa, we don't pass like the Shach. We assume that Onabaininess was a certain number of days. Basically, all the Rishonim use the name number 30. Whether they meant 30 days later or 30th day, I can't promise. But if they meant the day of the month, they should have said so. We assume not like the Shach. The Chavos Da'as, some people, we paskin like Rov Achronim, it means the 30th day. Right? Day 30. You know what? I should have written, right, 30th day, that's fine. We paskin like the Rov Achronim's 30th day. Some people are machmir as a chumra. I don't know anyone who paskins me'ikr didn't like the Chavos Da'as, but some people are machmir as a chumra to also be chos. I don't think anyone only paskins like the Chavos Da'as. But some people are machmir as a chumra to also Bichoshim the Chavos Da'as, and then they're poreish twice, once on the 30th day and once on the 31st day. Okay, so some people are machmer for the Chavos Da'as. The mice say you don't have to be machmer for the Chavos Da'as. Some people are, and that's perfectly fine. The mice say we paskin you don't have to be machmer for the Chavos Da'as. We paskin you only have to keep what most achronim say, which is the 30th day, which is 29 days later. That's the halacha l'maisa. You don't have to be machmer like the Chavos Da'as, although some people do, and that's very nice. There are two other big machlokos about the onabaininess. There's a famous shita of the Kreisi Uplesi, which is Rav Yonasan Ivashitz, which is also paskind, which is also the shita of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. I assume Chabadniks must do it if it's Shiva Shulchan Aruch HaRav. Although it's known most places in the Kreisi Uplesi. They say, the question is, how long is an onabaininess? Now, what would we all have said? How long is an onabaininess? Like, how long do you have to be Porish? One ona. Not just because it's called ona. So when it's called onabaininess, they mean the average period. They don't mean the average onas prisha. They mean the average onas Flugger. But, because all vestos are 12 hours, onus havesis, so why should this be different than any other vestis? Right? So, how long is an onabaininess? This is, when is the onabaininess? How long is the onabaininess? So, most achronim say, Ona achas. Oh, how do we know whether it's the day or the night? Based on the last period. If your last period is during the day, then it's 30 days later during the day. If your last period is night, it's 30 days later at night. I mean, that's the average, right? The average is day to day or night to night, right? Ona achas. If last period was during the day, then it's 1 day. And if the last period was at night, then it's 1 night, right? That's the standard psak. However, the Kreisi Uplesi Crazy place is one perush. It's Rionis and Ivashitz on your daya. Just like many, I'm sure you've seen many perushes like this in Shulchan Aruch, where they have like two parts, like the Kitzer part and the Harchava part. Like Mishnah Berurah or Halacha. So even the Chavos Das, right? You ever open to the back of the Chavos Das, right? You see he has on the mine that's on the bottom, I think in most of them. He has the Kitzer Halacha, and then he has the Iyun. The Kitzer and the Iyun. So the Krasi Uplasi, he wrote, the Krasi and Uplasi, the Krasi is the Kitzer, the Plasi is the Iyun. Same as the Baal Kitzer Shulchan Aruch, Lechem V'Simla and Hilchos Nida. I think the Lechem is the Kitzer and the Simla is the Iyun, if I'm not mistaken. So the Krasi Uplasi is not two Svarim, it's one Sefer. Just called Krasi Uplasi, he's in half a Krasi, half a Plasi. Even the Nesivus works like that. I mean, the Nesivus is the Chavos Das. The Nesivus on Choshen Mishpat, that you learn in yeshivish places when you when you're a Bacher even. Even Bacher learned that, right? If you learn Baba Kama, Baba Tziya. The Nesivus actually has two parts. He actually has different names for them, which no one knows. Mishpat Ha'urim and I don't remember what they are. He has two parts then. And likewise, Rionis and Ivashitz on Choshen Mishpat has Urim V'Tumim, where the Urim is crazy place, Urim V'Tumim, right, connected, is the Ketzer. Anyway, Ketzer, okay, so crazy place, all I want you to know is that it's one book, by Rionis and Ivashitz, and the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, which I would assume that's what Chabadniks do, because they generally do whatever it says in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, with very few exceptions. They say, nope, it's 24 hours. 24 hours. It is from Shkia to Shkia. Meaning it's a full day. I think he says from Shkia and not from Tzeis, because usually that's what we do for Vestos. Anyway, why? They say because normal Vestos are based on predicting what actually happens in your body. However, this is just a gzeira based on average people. So if it's just a gzeira is chal on a day, not on an ona. Okay, it's not the it's not really such a strong logic. Lemaisa, there are a few people out there who are macher for this crazy placing, and I would assume Chabadniks are, although I never, anyone ever check?
I know they have a lot of chumros in Hilchos Nida. I've heard that.
Yes, and they're all from some Kofpei tests. You mean Investos or in other things also? Investos, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, is a lot more machmir in a few places than others. We'll see his main chumrah in a little bit, relatively soon. Anyway, so I assume they would keep this. I assume if you're a Chabadnik, you should follow Shulchan Aruch HaRav and check with your local Chabad rabbi. There's always a local Chabad rabbi. The only thing you can safely say anywhere in the world, check with your local Chabad rabbi. But we paskin, not like the crazy place, we paskin, it's only 1 hour. Most places nowadays, the paskin, they're not even as a chumrah, they don't worry about the crazy placey. Like even people as a chumrah worry about the chavos das, usually don't worry about the crazy placey. And they assume, because just like it's not such a strong basis, not such strong logic, and they assume that it's only 12 hours. One other machlokes that is relevant is a fasting question. Remember the Trumas Hadeshen. Now there's going to be another famous Trumas Hadeshen in Simukov Tzadi, but we haven't gotten to that yet, so what's the Trumas Hadeshen that we learned? What was his interesting case of SS?
We know we can predict with confidence that she's not going to have her period.
Exactly. We can't predict when she'll have her period, but we can predict when she won't have her period. I've seen in some modern Hebrew books they call this a half SS. Right? For example, a woman, she doesn't get her period very regularly, but it's always at least 35 days. Right? Or it's always at least 26 days. Right? So in that case, what did we see earlier? That, well, until day 26 or 35 or whatever, she doesn't have to worry. It says if she has a vessus. Now here's an interesting question. According to Trumas Hadeshen, if you never see less than X days, then until X days, it's like you have a vessus. Hold on a second. What if you never see less than 33? Then until 33, it's like you have a vessus. If it's like you have a vessus, then you shouldn't have to keep the own abandonness. It's a good logic, no? So what if, now, there are women who have this. Not most women. I mean, because the own abandonness is a real, I think it's still a statistically valid average. If the average is 30, then most women don't always get it more than 30. But there is some minority of women who, on the one hand, some women always get 35 and have vestas kavua, and then there's nothing to talk about. That's the Shulchan Aruch already said, they don't have an ambiguous vestas kavua. But there are minority women out there who always get it at least 34. Could be 34, 35, 36, 37, 38. You know, it's not so kavua, but it's always much more than 30, or even a little more than 30, right? It's always more than 30. What if you're always more than 30? On what you could say, based on Trumas HaNeshen, that in through 30, you have a vestas kavua, and therefore you're exempt from unabandonness. And that is the psak of the Sidrei Tara in the back of the Shulchan Aruch here. You know, I'll try to read you one line if I can find. And if not, then... yeah. Aval... Im ha'isarah l'lamed aleph, yachach l'lamed beis, l'lamed aleph, yagav. And if she always saw 31, and then sometimes 32, 34. Lo'isa tzricha lachosh l'onabenidus. Sorry, I'm reading from Hakat and Chaf, the end. If she's always more than 30, she doesn't have to worry about onabenidus. Came to host the Jews l'ter shol shol, she says he has a chazok that she'll never see within 30. Avgav d'acher shol shen l'ves kavu, mikomachim tok shol shem host l'shol tira, komosh gaza b'trumas adeshen, etc. Right? Says the Sidrei Tara and Rav Moshe Pasuk the same way. So what if a woman has a half veset or a veset trumas hadeshen, which are two sort of code words, right? Meaning she never sees less than 31 or more, right? 31, however you define it. Define 31 in a way that it'll be more than one biggest. Right, so does she have to keep on obeying this or not? So says the Sidrei Tara, she has no onabeinoness, and the svara is that she's keilu yeshla veses kavua kol shloshim. For the first 30 days, she has a veses kavua. She doesn't really have Vesca Vua, but it says if she had a Vesca Vua when the day 30 comes. So if she has Vesca Vua, she's Pachar Bona Bainanus. However, the Chavos Das disagrees. The Chavos Das is early in Kuf Pei Vav. Maybe I'll try to read you a line of Chavos Das. This, by the way, is Lamaisa, meaning it happens in a minority of cases, but a Matzoi minority. A rabbi will get this question eventually. He won't get this question every day, but he will get this question eventually. Says the Chavos Das, and the Sidrei Tara was in Kuf Pei Tes, the end of Sivkat and Chaf. The Chavos Das in Kuf Pei Vav, in Sivkat and Gimel, he says, give me a second. Isha shiroa tamid la'achar shloshim yom, the beginning of Sukkot and Gimel, va'achar shloshim yom in the Veses, who's always more than 30, even though she's not kavua. Lo tochash la'ona beinanis? Would you say she doesn't have to worry about ona beinanis? Va'avik isha l'shavesh yin chashil l'beinanis? Va'vaday lesa! That's of course not true, as a proof in all the poskim. Of course you wouldn't say that. So, says the Chavos Das, says the Chavos Das, that she has to keep Ona Beinanis. Oh, what's the Svara? What's the Svara for the Chavos Das? It doesn't make sense. Who cares at the average? She's like a Ves Kavu. It's Pashut, not true. Meaning, it's no basis in reality. So, what's the Svara for the Chavos Das? Okay, I didn't look up the Chavos Das expressed it this way, but anyone think of the Svara? Exactly. Right? I mean, the poskim write, why is onabeinus taken seriously? Because everyone has to have at least one vesis. So if you have ves kavua, you have it. If not, you have the onabeinus. And don't count vesis in a kavua. That's not a real vesis. Everyone has to have the one serious vesis. If not kavua, onabeinus. It's just a gzeira that you have. Why? Because we can't say you'll never get your period. And therefore, since it's a gzeira that everyone should have at least one vesis, the gzeira applies even when it's impossible.
Why isn't that solid decision?
Because, for example, if it passes, you don't have to do bedikah.
Okay.
So what does that mean? That means that there's a woman who gets her veses and never has to check if she ever got her period the rest of her life because she never had another period. Can't
she? Eventually. We just don't know which day it is.
This is
the most expected date. Not that there's no date.
Okay, I hear what you're timing that. Of course she got eventually, but why does that mean she has to be choshes on a particular day?
Right.
Okay, but nonetheless.
Right. Wait, couldn't you more easily say that she's taken another upper?
Okay, you could say that also. The svara, let's say that. The svara is low plug. But I think the svara is because, okay, you could say the svara is low plug, but I think the svara is also because if it was just trying to approximate her period, then they would have been plug. But since it's just to give everyone a veses, okay, but however you want. Low plug slash, they were gozer that everyone has to keep something. And for this woman, if she doesn't have a veses kavua, she has to keep something, and the only option is onabainus. Okay, so that's machlokes. Do we have a low plug here or not? Big machlokes achronim, you could add a list and, of lots of chash of achronim on both sides. Lemaisa.
Does anyone say she has to keep it after 31 days or 32 days?
No, that would have been an interesting solution. Like, let's say she's always 33 or more, someone could have said, let her keep 33. But no one says that. I mean, maybe you can find it some very obscure source, but Lemaisa, different people pass in different ways. It's not poshut nowadays, but Lemaisa, some people pass in like the Chavastas. Lemaisa, we pass like the Sidur Tara, or Moshe writes like the Sidur Tara and the Ibris Moshe, Chilik Beis, Seven Ayin Beis, and Mary Willig Paskins like the Sidur. Everything I'm saying in Vestos is just what I heard explicitly from Mary Willig. We Paskin like the Sidur Tara, that if a woman is always sees 34 or more, then she just doesn't keep on obeying this. And if you'll say the Mark Zera does apply to her, the answer is only Ayin Kavua, no other Zera applies to her, so why should it? Meaning, why should the illogical Xera apply? We all know she's not going to get her period. The last 20 years, she's never gotten her period less than 34. So, who are we fooling? So you might say, that's the nature of halacha, that Xera applies even when the reason doesn't apply. But we follow Sidrei Tara and says she doesn't have to keep it on obeying this. What will she do? She'll keep her vest, she'll come over, she'll do whatever she does. Or eventually, she'll notice she got her period. Okay, that's how we paskin. So much for Sif Aleph. You know what? Since I have, let's learn Sif Beis as well, because we have another minute and a half, and that's more than enough time to learn Sif Beis. We all know Sif Beis already. Kate said, Kovato, how do you establish a Veses? Go Shatir, Arba, Pam, Menim, Shlosh, Zvanim. Basically, what we know in Sif Beis, which we know from Chassan classes, is that what are the two basic Vestos? Hafluga and Yom HaChodesh. Hafluga means spacing, 35 days later, 35 days later, 35 days later. And Yom HaChodesh means same day of the month. That's what he says. How are you Kobe? How are you Kobe Hafluga? How many periods do you need to be Kobe Hafluga? 4, because you need the first period to start counting the Hafluga to the second, right? So if you have 4 periods and between them are 3 even intervals, don't you rasa yom ulusof esrim yom pamacheres ve ulusof esrim yom ba ulusof esrim yom bezenek raves haflagos. The first reiyah doesn't count because that has to be the basis for counting the second reiyah, right? So you need 4 periods to get 3 haflagos. L'fishein of haflaga. Va'afilu kodesh shibato shalosh pa'amim choshesheh shemiyadach shirasa pamacha sof esrim choshesheh megan ve'elach sheyi esrim. But, and here's the chiddush, we already knew this, but there's such thing as vesh she'enu kavua. It happens once, your choshes is enu kavua. Right? So it happens 3 aflagos is kavua, 1 aflag is enu kavua. So if you see now, and in 20 days, then, 20 days from then, you have to be choshed again. V'cheimber is ha-yomim, shu li-yom li-yom le-chodesh. Likewise, for the yom of the chodesh, miyadach shor asop ha-achas li-yom li-dril le-chodesh, going chav hei o chav al chav hei bo-choshes l'ham acheres. If you see the 21st or 25th of the month, she has to be choshed that month as an enu kavua next. That day next month, Vashul Shamish also owner. But what then the Sharmini Vestrich and Kane, Chot Vesadil Goshbar Simonze, and likewise for all other kinds of SS, that Yafni Choshesh, except for Dilug. Okay, I see 90 seconds was not really enough. So we'll just have to pick up with finishing up this Sif next time, and we'll just make sure, that I want to put on the board how to clearly explain it to people. So we will continue this Mirat Hashem next time.
After Simon Kof Pei Tes, we're going to have a Bechina.
What?
It's going to, yeah.
Maybe estimate.